Let's shift to the culture and craft segment, because there are several stories today that are about the practice of software development and writing rather than specific technologies. The "I Stopped Creating Content" piece by Michael Lynch, who writes the Refactoring English blog, scored 192 points with 151 comments. Lynch's argument is essentially that the word content is corrosive to the act of writing. Content implies interchangeable, fungible material produced for algorithmic distribution. Writing implies something made with intention, for a specific audience, with a particular point. He stopped thinking of his work as content production, and his output improved, or at least felt more meaningful to him.
The HN comments on that one are characteristically self-referential, with a lot of writers in the community sharing similar experiences. The piece touches on something real about how the vocabulary we use to describe our work shapes how we approach it. Calling something content invites you to think about production rates, SEO optimization, and distribution metrics. Calling it writing or an essay invites you to think about the argument you're making and whether it holds up.
The Perfection is Not Over-Engineering piece scored 244 points with 106 comments. The author's argument is a pushback against a common piece of software development advice that seeking perfection is a form of over-engineering and should be avoided in favor of shipping. The counterargument is that these are categorically different things. Over-engineering means adding complexity and abstraction beyond what the problem requires. Perfection, in the author's framing, means deeply understanding what the problem requires and solving it completely and correctly. You can over-engineer a simple solution, and you can write a perfect simple solution. They're orthogonal qualities.
The Psychology of Software Teams, a Routledge book that appeared on HN Today with 102 points and 30 comments, is in a similar space. It's examining the human dynamics of how software gets built, which is a topic that generates a lot of practitioner interest, even though it's hard to study rigorously. The comment thread has engineers sharing experiences with team dysfunction, and the book apparently draws on psychological research to explain patterns that developers often notice empirically, but don't have frameworks to analyze.
Jelly UI is worth covering. 526 points and 159 comments, one of the higher engagement developer tool stories today. It's a library that adds soft body physics to native HTML form controls, so a checkbox that jiggles when you click it, an input field that has elastic deformation when you type. The implementation is genuinely clever because it's working with native DOM elements rather than Canvas or WebGL, so you get the accessibility and semantic correctness of real HTML while adding a layer of delightful physics behavior. Whether this belongs in production interfaces is a separate question, but as a technical demonstration, it's impressive.
The VTubing story, how a Japanese phenomenon is going worldwide, scored 44 points with 22 comments. VTubing, for the uninitiated, is the practice of using motion-captured virtual avatars as online personas for streaming and content creation. It originated in Japan around 2017 with companies like Hololive and has been expanding globally since. The Tokyo Dev article examines the mechanics of why it's spreading. The avatar provides a layer of privacy and persona construction that appeals to creators who want to build an audience without full personal exposure. And the fan community around VTubers has developed its own culture and economics.
The Ex-Situ Project, the open-source spatial index of displaced cultural artifacts, scored 38 points with 22 comments, and is one of those ShowHN projects with genuine humanitarian weight. The project maps cultural artifacts that have been removed from their countries of origin through colonialism, wartime looting, or disputed purchases, and shows both where they are now and where they came from. It's essentially making visible a problem that museums have been grappling with increasingly as repatriation claims have become more prominent in international cultural policy discussions.
The koi pond mosaic made from 3D printer waste is exactly the kind of creative project that represents HN at its best. Someone took 10 pounds of material that would have gone in the trash and turned it into something beautiful. Scored 39 points with 32 comments. The interesting engineering challenge is that 3D printer waste comes in inconsistent shapes and colors, so the artist had to develop a sorting and composition process to create the mosaic. It's a good reminder that constraints can be generative.
Now, time for our What If We're Wrong segment, and I want to apply it to the most confident claim circulating today, the idea that OpenWeights Chinese AI models are winning the global developer mindshare battle and will establish themselves as the default infrastructure for AI development outside the United States.
I'll defend the claim first. The evidence base is real. Qwen models are genuinely competitive on benchmarks. Kimi Work is a functional productivity suite, and the economic argument for free open weights over paid APIs is straightforward. Developer communities respond to availability and cost friction. The claim is reasonable on its face.
Here's where I'd probe it. The assumption embedded in the open weights are winning narrative is that model capability is the primary constraint on developer adoption. But there are at least three other constraints that could matter more. First, trust and security review. Enterprises and regulated industries don't just adopt models based on capability. They require security audits, data residency guarantees, and compliance certifications. Chinese origin models face significantly higher scrutiny in these contexts than American alternatives, regardless of weight availability.
Second, the tooling ecosystem around American models is substantially more mature. LangChain, Llama Index, the major cloud providers' AI services, vector databases with native integrations, these are all built primarily against OpenAI and Anthropic APIs. Switching to Qwen or Kimi might require rebuilding or adapting a lot of that tooling, which creates a switching cost that offsets some of the weight availability advantage.
Third, and this is the assumption I'd most want to stress test, open weights don't guarantee continued openness. A lab that releases weights today can change its licensing terms tomorrow, restrict future releases, or face government pressure to limit distribution to certain countries or use cases. The history of open source software includes many cases where community trust was built on openness and then damaged by restriction. If we're wrong about the open weight strategy is winning claim, the signal to watch for is differential adoption rates between enterprise and individual developer contexts. If enterprise adoption of Chinese open weights models remains low, even as individual developer adoption grows, it suggests the trust and compliance barriers are more durable than the narrative assumes.
And watch for licensing changes. If a major Chinese lab restricts its open weights in the next 12 to 18 months, either voluntarily or under regulatory direction, the ecosystem lock-in effect works in reverse. Developers who built on those weights face a sudden cliff, and that experience would reshape the risk calculus for the entire open weight strategy.